Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. It is a beautiful July Wednesday here in the Old Pueblo. Hopefully, you listeners have survived the great storm of July 14th, 2024. I know it took its toll on the service industry. We happened to lose power in St. Philip's Plaza at about 6:14 p.m., and it didn't come back until nearly midnight that evening, putting all of our restaurants essentially out of business for the evening. Looking at the internet where we were able to get power, over 30,000 Tucsonans were without power, and dozens of restaurants were shut down throughout the night. This is actually a really big deal for our local economy. These businesses take tremendous hits when sales you were planning for and gearing up for suddenly get vaporized. While it's certainly nobody's fault, nobody can predict a monsoon storm with this sort of power. In fact, it happens probably once or twice every year in some capacity. Either way, it's absolutely devastating to your local establishments who not only paid all the labor to gear up for that Friday or Saturday, or fortunately in this case, Sunday night, but also for all the food products as well too that you've heated or cooled or got prepared to sell for dinner that quite frankly end up going to waste after many hours without power. And so a shout out to all my brothers and sisters in the service industry that hung in there throughout that one. Hopefully all of you listeners have got your power back as well. Coming up today, I've got a really awesome guest, a candidate for Pima County Supervisor, District 2, John Backer. But first, we're going to have a little food for thought about the restaurant industry here in Tucson. As we all witnessed on the news all Saturday evening, right, an assassination attempt on a presidential candidate. But today, rather than talk about this national news, I'm going to talk about an assassination, quite frankly, on the local businesses based on some of our lack of government. To begin with, let's talk about the modern streetcar. It's about to have its 10-year anniversary this Saturday, July 20th, right? 10 years of the modern streetcar. Think about what our government's choices have done to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to create a streetcar that goes from essentially Speedway and Helen to the Mercado San Agustin. We shut down downtown for basically a year and a half to make these changes, spent hundreds of millions of dollars. And are we in a better place with this modern streetcar? I worry, quite frankly, that we're not. The transportation problems that were solved by the modern streetcar could have been handled by 10 or 12 Prevo buses bought by the county administration, which would have more efficiently transported people and without nearly as much damage to the roads. Think about what Congress would look like had we made a different choice. Perhaps if we had closed it for vehicular traffic. And all of those patios, some of those new COVID patios that you've seen that were forced upon us by our current Board of Supervisors, imagine if those patios were permanent and each of them faced the street that was a sort of open alcohol area where you could walk in between various restaurants and bars on Congress downtown to save 3 or 4 parking spaces in front of every business. We spent hundreds of millions of dollars to take a streetcar to essentially take fraternity kids from the University of Arizona to go party downtown and have a round trip back. And while that certainly is not a not benefit for us, was that worth the effort? I don't think so. I believe looking at our history in the city of Tucson, we could have and should have dealt with a number of these problems substantially sooner, right? Leading up to the show, I was talking to John Backer and to Chris DeSimone about how winning in politics is showing up. Well, winning in the service industry is also showing up. The ability to be in your business every single day makes a huge difference in the success of local restaurants and bars. And every day when I make my journey from St. Philip's Plaza over to the Maverick located at Grant and Tangaverde, I get the benefit or displeasure of driving down my namesake Grant Road. Now, I remember when I moved to Tucson, Arizona in 1995, that Grant Road actually had what they called the suicide lane, right? Going the traffic from 7 to 9 p.m., moved from the middle left lane towards downtown and the university. And then from 4 to 6 p.m., that lane moved in the other direction, transporting people from the university and from downtown eastbound back to their homes. Seems like sort of a novel idea. It was created in 1981 by the city council. But this was during a time that people didn't have clocks on their phones that were synced up with atomic time like we do right now. This was an era when you wanted to get atomic time, you actually had to call a phone number. I know this sounds archaic, as if we're using an abacus or something over here, or, you know, city council rules written on papyrus. But truthfully, like, this was a thing that we recognized in 1981, guys, that we had a traffic problem in Tucson. And we're sitting here today in 2024, when I drive down Grant Road every day looking at the assassination of local businesses based on our inaction since 1981. We have not completed this task, right? I look at just recently this week, they announced that Robert's restaurant was closing on Grant, right? It was going to become a carniceria. And nothing against carnicerias. Certainly we are, and hopefully the best Mexican food in America, and we're adding to that total. But it's also probably not something we need. You see the Bay Horse up for sale. You see the number of local businesses on Grant Road that have been plowed over waiting for this improvement that has yet to occur. We're sitting on now 4 decades, and we haven't completed this. This suicide lane ran until 2004 before the city council voted to get rid of that. And if you remember, it was a complete and total disaster, with tourists and out-of-town guests having no idea how this would work in either direction, and certainly having clocks that were slightly offset by 2 or 3 or 4 minutes. It was absolutely terrifying to me. And this is as a new resident from Detroit, Michigan, a city that on its own is noted for being terrifying. And I was substantially more afraid of Tucson traffic than I was of Detroit, Michigan traffic and even crime at that particular point. And so here we are, decades in the future, and we still have barely completed Broadway Boulevard, which also had a suicide lane from the early 80s until 2001, before the city council voted to get rid of that one. And Grant Road as well, too. We are looking at local businesses having been absolutely clipped by our local authorities' inability to get a job done. And so when we come back after the break, we're going to talk to John Backer, a candidate for Pima County Supervisor District 2, someone that's no stranger to politics. John has actually run for Pima County Supervisor District 4 twice, once in 2016 and once in 2020. So you may have seen the name, you may have seen the signs. We're going to break down like some of the mistakes that we've made in Tucson County government and in city government, what we can do better. John's willing to show up. And I think that that's something that maybe we could talk about, you know, the incumbent and how he has or has not shown up for those particular positions. Are we in a better position in Pima County than we were 10, 20, 30 years ago? That's going to be a big question coming up. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. This is Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and this morning we are joined by John Backer, candidate for Pima County Supervisor District 2. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Grant. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us here on 10:30 a.m. The Voice.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
It is election season right now. Ballots were mailed on July 3rd. The election is July 30th, which means it is election month. How's it going for you?
It's going great. The one thing I want to point out to make sure everyone realizes is the county recently sent out a sample ballot that had the primary day being August 30th. And they've you know, put stuff on their website and going to be doing some communication, but want to make sure everyone realizes it is July 30th is primary day.
That is unbelievable to me to think that our county recorder, whose job is to run the election on a specific date, right? You've got one job and you missed that one pretty heavily. Hopefully that does not deter some potential voters from getting out there and doing their civic duty.
Absolutely.
So speaking of civic duty, you've run for office now, John, a number of times. I've seen your name both running in the District 4 mm-hmm. supervisor race, and now you're running in for supervisor in District 2. Can you explain the change in districts here?
Yeah, absolutely. I was in supervisor, you know, District 4, as you said, living in the same neighborhood I've lived in since 2007, and the county redistricted me into District 2. In the previous two times I ran against Steve Christie first in an open primary and then challenged him as an incumbent of our same party in 2020. And when I challenged Steve Christie, it was all about the issues, nothing personal. And I was serving Steve Christie on the Board of Adjustments at the time. And I'm real big on just being face-to-face, man-to-man type of person. And I went to him and I said, look, I'm going to challenge you for that seat. And I'm ready to give you my letter of resignation for that Board of Adjustments because it's your seat to provide. And he's such a gentleman. He said, no, I want you to stay on that board because you're doing a great job. So when I lost in both of those primaries, I endorsed Steve Christie fully, asked my supporters to support him, and I'm excited at the prospect of working with him on a Board of Supervisors and giving him that second he currently doesn't have when he raises issues that need to be discussed for the public.
Certainly, we've talked about Robert's Rules of Order and having a first and a second vote might be able to get some issues, you know, at least out of the dais and into a vote, and where we could have the current incumbents take some positions rather than just voting in lockstep 4-1, 4-1, 4-1 every time.
Absolutely. And the Board of Supervisors, it isn't just showing up and voting. The work that most people don't see and don't realize is all the work that should be done before that vote, doing the research, listening to people, talking to people, and coming prepared to ask hard questions that deserve good answers before something's voted on. Part of the challenge today is the addendum, you know, shows up 2 days before the meeting takes place. That's not enough time to have a laundry list of items that they ultimately want a rubber stamp on to move forward. Those things have to be questioned.
Without a doubt. I mean, Christy Simone follows up a lot on Mondays, right, with Joanne DiFilippo, who kind of breaks down financially what's going on these Board of Supervisors meetings. But we're basically getting this with just 1 day notice or 2 days notice, as you suggest, to process what can be tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Absolutely. And we're on that board to question. We're not just on that board to vote up or down.
So you've got a fair bit of governmental experience, though, with in terms of development. Not only did you work for Steve Christie, I see that you were the former chair of planning and zoning for the municipality of Saurita as well, too.
Absolutely. I stepped down from that seat at the end of my term at the end of June as the chairman. And one of the biggest issues that the town of Saurita has ever faced was the Vulcan asphalt plant that was being discussed to go in by Quail Creek down there. And I was the guy who was going to hold the meetings in the auditorium down there and listen to the voters and get their opinions. Prior to that taking place, the town council agreed with Vulcan to not ever put an asphalt plant in there, and that issue went away. But we were all doing our duty. And what a lot of people don't realize, too, when you serve on one of those boards or commissions and you have a hearing before you, you can't take sides. You can't talk openly about what your thoughts are and stuff. You are the judge and the jury in those hearings. And our job on the Planning and Zoning Commission was to hear both sides, make a recommendation to the town council. And that's something I take very seriously. As I've said before, a job worth doing is a job worth doing right.
Without a doubt. So before the break, I was talking about Grant Road and Broadway expansion and how we've had decades in the making of trying to make up for, quite frankly, the mistake that we don't have a crosstown freeway system in any capacity. A Band-Aid that probably should have been ripped off in the early 80s, where it would have been a lot less painful than trying to rip this off in the 2020s at this point. What would you do differently as a county supervisor to help with this infrastructure and development?
Well, I certainly wouldn't go with the road diet that's being talked about on the boards and town council to limit lanes of traffic when we already have a tremendous problem. Also, if you're going to do some road work, you don't want to eliminate businesses or harm businesses while you take an inordinate amount of time to move forward with that road work. A crosstown freeway would be fantastic, but 80s would have been a lot better because the cost would have been a lot less and the impact to existing businesses today would have been a lot less. But we need to, you know, like in another example is the streetcar downtown. When that was going on, I was asking the question, why are we doing this instead of just having buses? As you mentioned in the earlier segment, without all that infrastructure, without the negative impact to businesses, we could have accomplished the same thing and not adversely affected the businesses. And some people think that, you have to take sides, either the residents or the business. But the business owners are residents, and those residents need and want jobs, and those businesses provide it. So there's pros and cons to every decision we make. The key is to listen to everyone involved and take away the best answer we can to move forward after hearing everyone.
Without a doubt. And of course, it's easy for us to Monday morning quarterback a decade after the streetcar and say, hey, we woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, we told you. But quite frankly, like, this doesn't seem to be a tremendous improvement for the city of Tucson. And if it wasn't for the development of that were funded by Rio Nuevo, I would suggest that that is actually the buoy keeping the downtown restaurant and hospitality scene alive. And there isn't a tremendous amount of retail down there either way, where other properties such as on Grant Road, not being buoyed by Rio Nuevo, being outside of that district, don't have any economic incentives at all. And we look at the devastation that's just occurred in the wake of this construction, and it's probably not going to get better for the next couple of years.
Absolutely. And God bless those businesses. Some have talked far east side of Broadway, you know, really holding the line and really working hard to survive. And we need to support those businesses and be reasonable with them.
Without a doubt, these sort of expansions have clipped, not just like we talked about Robert's restaurants, but it took away La Rua's on Broadway. There's a lot of local greats that aren't here anymore and haven't exactly rebuilt. The downtown and Broadway area do get some Rio Nuevo help, but my namesake Grant Road is going to have a long and uphill road to get better. If you look, though, like at, say, Grant and Tucson, an intersection that was pretty downtrodden and is only a mile and some change away from Grant and Alvernon, the Culinary Dropout, the Snooze, the Postino, right? Kingfisher is there, Dante's Fire. You've actually got like a little culinary corner over there that's sort of gentrified that neighborhood. And I'm hoping that perhaps we could continue with additional food service down Grant and make that better.
Yeah.
Speaking of geographics, let's talk about the District 2. Like, give us, for our listeners, the boundaries of Pima County District 2.
Okay. Well, I've got a map on my website, backbacker.org. But basically, the most of Sarita is included in Supervisor District 2 since the redistricting. We go just a bit on the other side of the interstate down that way, and then basically follow Nogales Highway up. Swing around on I-10, pick up South Tucson, up to Broadway, east on Broadway to Sarnoff, encompass the Air Force Base, the Boneyard over there, and then come back down to Sarita.
Okay, so that's a pretty big geographic district as well, too.
It is. I put up 100 signs, so I know how big it is.
Yes, pounding signs is a skill set that most people don't know exists until you've got to go out there and do that in the desert heat.
Absolutely.
So you've got a primary coming up. There happens to be a Republican challenger on the 30th. How's the fundraising going for that particular race?
It's going okay. I think the primary is always a challenge, right? Some of the organizations out there don't want to step up and make any contributions, any endorsements until after the primary. Also, the economy is really hard. And so what I like to do is I squeeze the life out of every dollar of campaign donations to get the most. Things I can do myself, I do myself, and I don't hire people to do them to make those dollars go further. The same way we need to do with the county budget is squeeze every dollar out of every life. The life out of every dollar.
Without a doubt. I think that a pragmatic look into our budget is something that really has been lacking, quite frankly. There's a lot to unpack in Pima County and the policies that we have moving forward for economic development and road development as well.
Absolutely. And in my experience, 30 years in the technical industry, you know, we've got like a $500,000 increase in software. Now, it's probably the new ERP system, but I've been on both sides of that. So I really want to take a harder look at that when I have access to that information.
Well, part of the success in politics, life, and business is showing up. And so John Backer has shown up today to join us on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, Jump in Tucson. We've got great shows coming up for you later this week. We've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance on Thursday. Dr. Ed Ackerley brings it home on Fridays and on Mondays. General Ted Maxwell from SALC brings the Engagement Hour on Tuesdays as well, too. So hopefully you guys do stick around. after Jump In Tucson, after Wake Up Tucson, spend a little time with us here on Jump In as we engage in local politics and local business. It's one of the amazing parts about 10:30 a.m. and Bustos Media is how we keep it local, talking about all things pertinent here with you in the 520. Don't go anywhere. When we come back after the break, we're going to have additional segments with Pima County Supervisor candidate John Backer, who's promising to show up every time in person as opposed to on Zoom over there. You're listening to Jump In Tucson, 10:30 a.m., The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Hey, welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. Thank you for listening to Jump In Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, joined live by Pima County Supervisor candidate John Backer. Welcome back, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, before the break, we were talking about the District 2 and its geographic area. Let's talk about District 2 supervisors' voter registration right now. Is this a Democrat or Republican-leaning district?
Very much a Democrat-leaning district. About 45,000 registered Democrats, about 33,000 registered independents or independent voters, and 23 to 25 registered Republicans. So definitely is a challenging district to win as a Republican, but I've had my path forward from day one when I decided to throw my hat in the ring March of last year.
So why the interest in politics? This is your third race running right now, so you've got a passion for this. There's a fire somewhere on the inside. Break it down for us about where that comes from.
Well, I think Tucson could be so much better than she is today, and I started out my working career with the Air Force, and I come from the volunteer state. And I've done a lot of work in volunteering for different causes and stuff. And I think we can, one person can't do everything, but everybody can do something. And what I want to do is put forth a candidate with a vision and willingness to listen to everyone to make Tucson the best it can be and fight the battles for the people of Pima County who currently are not being heard.
So to get the chance to run against incumbent Matt Hines, you've got to win a Republican primary this July 30th. How many people generally come out and vote in the Republican primary District 2? I know it's been redistricted, so it's the historic numbers aren't going to be 100% accurate for future prognostications, but give us a rundown of how many people vote.
In 2020, there were about 7,700 people, Republicans, voted in the primary. With the redistricting and looking at the likely voters from the voter data, we're looking at maybe 8,000 to 10,000. It's really hard to guesstimate because we're bringing more people to the party. People saw the assassination attempt, and you never know where exactly they are. Maybe with the inflation that we're all fighting and the bills we're all trying to pay, maybe more people will be inspired to step forward and vote. And I would love to see as many people as possible go to the ballot or vote early and make their voices heard.
And if you win that primary, you'll be the Republican candidate running against incumbent Matt Hines. Matt does not have a Democrat or independent challenger in any sort of primary, correct?
That's correct.
And so he's going to kind of skate on through right to the general election?
Yeah, it's what he does best.
Skating on through?
Yeah.
So ultimately, in November, if you are chosen to be the Republican candidate, you're looking at a little over 100,000 potential voters to show up over there. What's the game plan to get Republican voters or independent voters to lean John Backer as opposed to the Democrat-heavy voter registration of District 2?
I'm going to try my level best to reach out and communicate with as many of those independent voters as possible and let them know I'm willing to listen. Before the election, after the election, because right now we're not being heard. And now that Matt Hines was locked out of the board meeting there, he knows what it's like not to be heard. And we're going to change that. And whether you're a D or an R or an independent, if someone's not showing up for work and someone's not willing to listen to you, it's time we go a different way. We've all heard, the definition of madness is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. The only way to get a different result in Pima County is to elect me and others in the Republican Party to take control of that Board of Supervisors and bring prosperity to Pima County. And as I've said also, we have a lot of poverty in Pima County, I think in the neighborhood of 20% poverty. The cure for poverty is opportunity, and we need to bring opportunity to Pima County.
Without a doubt. So incumbent Matt Hines draws a lot of ire from the Republican Party, right? Over the years, it's been both the attendance record, showing up in person versus showing up in Zoom. He happened to be a humongous proponent of lockdowns. Nothing, a quick cursory glance of his social media berates Governor Ducey for ever even opening up the state of Arizona, and basically called a lot of people murderers for their wanting to open up their businesses or livelihoods in some capacity. He also had a very low percentage of showing up in person. When the Board of Supervisors meetings went back to in person, it generally happened for him to show up over Zoom. Now, certainly, it's a new world and a new economy. We do a lot of things over Zoom these days, but as someone that works and does both, I found an inefficacy, quite frankly, in Zoom meetings. There's a big difference between showing up in person and looking a man or woman in the eye, right, and maintaining attention the entire time versus Zoom. What do you think about Hines doing his supervisor meetings in Zoom?
Well, like you say, it's a brave new world, but I'm the type of person, I guess I'm old school. I believe face-to-face and you lose so much by doing Zoom meetings. You need to be there. You need to be present. You need to be in the moment. And you need to show up, as you said a few times during the interview. And I will always show up.
So Pima County Supervisor is actually a pretty well-paid position politically, relatively speaking, right? We're talking about an approximately $75,000 a year salary right now?
Yeah, I think it's 76.6, and it's getting ready to go to 96.6 is the number.
So nearly $100,000, right? This is full-time job payment. This isn't ye old city council rate of $24,000 where you were forced to sort of have a secondary career path because you were getting, as the left on the restaurant side says, sub minimum wage in some capacity, right? This is a full-time expectation from our community with a full-time payment. What are you going to do differently than the incumbent when you win?
I'm going to show up. I'm going to listen. And the votes that the board takes at the Board of Supervisor meetings are not the most significant part of that job. That's most visible portion. But the real work begins when you get the agenda, you get the addendum, you and your staff does the research to understand the pros and cons and comes up with the questions that need to be asked to represent correctly the people of Pima County. I will do that. I will be a full-time supervisor. I will be the kind of supervisor the residents of Pima County have always deserved but haven't gotten. And it's a good thing that Matt Hines is being paid a salary, because if he had to rely on tips, he wouldn't do very well.
Well, he also, of course, very infamously drew the ire of the Republican Party and a lot of Pima County constituency for the big Zoom gaffe that he had, right, with a young male lover appearing on a Zoom feed. And I'm actually going to give him a bit of a hall pass on that one myself, personally. Not for the Zoom part. I think he should be showing up in person, and I don't think there's any hall pass for that one. But quite frankly, somebody, a lover appearing behind the screen, had it been an attractive young co-ed, would we have not looked at this differently as a community? Like, I think that, you know, there was a bit of homophobic response to that one. And I actually don't necessarily care for the Republican Party's attack on him for that particular gaffe. Do you have a take on that one?
I feel much like you do. My biggest issue with him is him not showing up. And additionally, if he said that he didn't want to show up for meetings because he was concerned for COVID, why in the world would he be on a cruise ship? That's the bigger issue there. Who he's with is his business. Freedom is hard for a lot of people. He be him, we be us, you know, and go forward, but show up for the job you're being paid to do.
Without a doubt, this is 2024, and we can be a tolerant and great society, but we certainly can have the expectation that you're going to show up for work for a job that's got basically a six-figure salary to it. And in some cases, I fear that Supervisor Hines is quite frankly bothered by this position. Like, it seems to be a bit of an inconvenience rather than something he looks forward to.
Right. And he has repeatedly said that he doesn't care to hear from the people, both in his actions and his words. You know, there's a picture of him out there where he's in the back room eating a bagel while the call to the audience is going on. He's tried to eliminate the call to the audience. And one of the first things I want to do in being elected is return the call to the audience to the way it was before this board. To the most important thing we do is listen to the people, because our power comes from the consent of the people. And consent doesn't just mean you got elected. It means you're listening to them to find out what their needs are, what their concerns are, and taking appropriate action.
Without a doubt, the call to the audience is our opportunity as society to face our electeds and to bring up issues that are important to us as a community. And quite frankly, shutting this thing down, muting it, reducing its scope, I think is very hurtful to our society.
Absolutely. Anything that could be done for the people of Pima County should be done in the daylight, the bright daylight. Transparency. Don't hide in the dark.
Without a doubt. Well, we've got one more segment coming up with Pima County Supervisor candidate John Backer. He's running for District 2 against incumbent Matt Hines. He's got a lot of things to say about what he's going to be able to do better in Pima County if and when he wins that election on November 5th. Do take note that your last days to get a mail-in ballot sent to you in some capacity are coming up on the 19th. And again, Election Day is July 30th. Not August 30th, as our Pima County recorder has sent out to many mail listeners or many mail receiving folk out there. So hang in there. Don't go anywhere. We've got one more segment with John Backer coming up after the break on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. This is our final segment of Jump in Tucson. We are joined with John Backer, candidate for Pima County Supervisor District 2. Welcome back, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, so we were talking before the break about some of the maladies and mistakes that perhaps the incumbent has made, but let's switch back to the positive front. What do you think you could do as supervisor to improve city and county relations? Because there certainly has been some friction between both Pima County and the city of Tucson.
Taking Sarita as an example, because I live in Sarita, I've had conversations with Mayor Tom Murphy down there. And I asked him, what would be the ideal scenario with Pima County working with the town? And, we expect our cities to recognize the autonomy that a city has within a county. We also expect to be listened to as a city and then be treated fairly, because there are memorandums of understanding, there are IGAs where, due to economies of scale, the county and cities sometimes work together for wastewater, for shared defense, law enforcement and first responders and so forth. So it all begins with listening. And the current supervisor that covers Sarita, for example, has not had many conversations at all with the town of Sarita. And it all begins with communication. Communication is key, and listening and understanding the perspectives of the people you're dealing with. I'm also a realtor, and if I had not negotiated and compromised in the deals that I've negotiated, I wouldn't have very many deals. And key part of doing that negotiation is finding out, what is the number one thing someone wants to get out of a transaction? Is it terms? Is it price? Is it something else? Because when you understand from a holistic view what's being tried to be accomplished, you can come up with a win-win scenario where everyone walks away feeling good about what comes to pass.
Easier said than done, for sure, right?
Absolutely.
Big words over here by John Backer, again, candidate, Pima County Supervisor, District 2. So tell me a little bit more about your background. We got a few minutes over here. Where does your professional background come from to get you to this point?
So I started out of high school with the Air Force. I was an A-10 electrician at Davis-Monthan. Served 4 years there, served 3 years in the Air National Guard, working here by the Tucson Airport on F-16s. Then I transitioned into technology. I'm a self-taught programmer. I taught myself how to program when I was 13. And back in those days, it was TRS-80s and older technology that a lot of the younger folks haven't heard of. But it served me well through my career. I've spent 30 years in technology, 10 years at IBM, working on a worldwide team. I've traveled to Brazil, Korea, the UK, Japan, and really it just adds a whole different flavor to what we have here in America when you get to travel these foreign countries. They all have something special about them, but no place I've been is like the U.S. And I also have served law enforcement community for 15 years in my two most recent positions in technology. And I've got some very dear friends that I've made through the years. I've attended a lot of conferences to learn about law enforcement and the border security and that sort of thing. I've been to the border as well. I met Judge Jeannie Pirro from Fox News down at the border some time ago, and I just want to soak it all in. I want to listen and learn. I'm a lifetime learner, and I'm never the smartest person in a room. I want to surround myself with people smarter than me, because together there's nothing we can't solve together.
I love it. Very positive attitude indeed, sir. So you said you lived down in the Saurita area since 2007. Give us a few local restaurants down there that you like. Where do you and your wife like to hang out?
So there's a restaurant. It's a restaurant bar inside the Best Western Hotel down there in Green Valley called the 19th Hole. And they do karaoke one day on the weekends. They do trivia on Wednesdays. Me and my wife and a couple that we met back in Cub Scout days go there and play trivia. And we got a pretty good track record of coming up with the right answers. And then also the El Patio Mexican restaurant. And we enjoy both of those down there, but we also really enjoy Vero's Mexican Italian Bakery on the east side of Tucson. We recently had a lemon cheesecake that was just phenomenal.
Vero's is a great place. That's a great pick over there too, John. Where can listeners find out more information about you and your campaign?
So my website is backbacker.org. From there, you can go to my LinkedIn profile to get even more details about my experience in education. I've got 4 college degrees, a master's, a bachelor's, and 2 associate's degrees, 1 from Pima Community College. And so you can get to my Facebook page and everything from there. My endorsements, I'm endorsed by Mayor Tom Murphy, 2 city council members in Saurita. And I just really want to thank you for the time to come and talk to you. And I encourage everybody to visit my website, backbacker.org. There is a donation button. There's never enough money to get the message out, especially in the general when we're going uphill there and everyone can play a part.
Without a doubt. Hey, looking at your website, it looks like it's a baseball card sort of layout on this one as well, too. Like a front and back page over here with your stats.
Yes. I created a baseball card just recently, and I've got some ideas going forward in the general about how I'm going to leverage the baseball motif that I'll keep as a surprise.
Well, okay. Sounds perfect. We've certainly talked a lot of baseball before on Jump In Tucson, as we're big fans of local sports and trying so hard to find ways to bring, if not Major League Baseball, at least professional baseball back to the old Pueblo in some capacity. A task easier said than done.
Absolutely. There's a lot of tasks like that, but together we can get it done.
So what do you think of the Mosaic Quarter? We got a couple minutes over here. Like, this project, you know, just got some funding from the Board of Supervisors yesterday. Like, what do you think about that development?
Well, on the surface, it's great to support existing jobs, bring new jobs, but I have concerns, because if we don't take care of our residents and our businesses we have here today by taking care of public safety, I'm concerned what kind of tourism and what kind of customers will visit that place if we can't protect them and provide the type of environment they're all looking to spend time in.
No, without a doubt. Certainly the location on the south side has drawn, you know, a lot of attention since this area was picked for the baseball stadium in 1997, and it still hasn't been substantially improved yet.
Exactly.
And so we're hoping that perhaps, you know, those statistics can change here in the near future. But again, a lot of these problems go back, in some cases, decades. At the beginning of the show, we talked about the suicide lanes, the idea that the city of Tucson and Pima County recognized in the early 1980s, in the Reagan administration, that we were going to have some problems with east-west traffic. And here we are 43 years later, and we still don't have a complete and total solution for that.
And
these lack of solutions end up assassinating our local businesses here. If you want to support local places, they can't afford to have road construction that lasts a decade or more running right through their front yard, taking their parking lots and eating into their available space. So many people will just choose to go in other directions and take a different thoroughfare and perhaps not visit that establishment, not go to that business over here. And so I wish you a tremendous amount of success in your campaign, John. First and foremost, it takes a lot of lower intestinal fortitude to step up and run for politics, to put your name and face out there, to take that heat on social media as well. A big part of local politics and its success is just showing up. And so I thank you for showing up on the race, and I thank you for showing up today on Jump in Tucson.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here, and good luck to you as well.
Thank you very much, John. Appreciate it. And I appreciate all you listeners out there for joining us on Jump in Tucson. We love to talk all things local Tucson, restaurants, politics, and all kinds of fun things that happen here in the summer in the 520. Don't go anywhere. We've got Dennis Prager coming up after the break. Tom Moulton, Southern Arizona Attraction Alliance, is coming up tomorrow. Jump in Tucson. It's been a great hour. Thanks for spending part of your morning commute with me. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice.